Hi, this is Pastor Mike from the Gospel Church. You're listening to our podcast. It's my hope that as you listen to it, that you'll fall deeply in love with Jesus and that you trust him with every part of your life. Thanks for listening.
Now, if you have a copy of the scriptures, please turn with me to Mark. Mark chapter 2, we're going to be starting verse 18. And as you're turning there, I just want to just put a quick shout out for our worship night. So this week, we're doing a worship night on Thursday night, right here in this room at 6:30, we're going to be getting together, and we're going to make a big deal about Jesus. So if you enjoyed worshiping this morning with our worship team, just know that we're taking it to the next level on Thursday night. So get ready for an hour of just that, coming together and declaring that Jesus Christ is better. I would love to see you bring some people with you that don't know Jesus or that are disconnected or that just need to be refreshed in their walk with Jesus, because I believe that God's going to do some powerful stuff on Thursday night. So 6:30, right here in the same room, come join us and let's go declare that Jesus is better. And I cannot wait for Thursday. Like, I realize, like, we've been planning and preparing for this thing for a while. We've been, like, thinking about it. There's, like, whiteboards with all these kind of, like, ideas, like, what it's going to look like. And then I realized this Sunday morning, I was like, oh, shoot, it's actually this week, right? So it's been coming really, really quickly. And so I just want to make sure that you're there, because you're not going to want to miss this. It's going to be a pretty epic night. Now, Mark chapter 2, verse 18 is where we're going to be starting today. And we're going to be looking at three stories in which Jesus reveals what it looks like to have a relationship with himself. And so what we've been talking about over and over again through our study in the book of Mark is that Jesus has offered us a relationship, not just religion, that he's offered us a relationship with himself. And we're going to see three stories today where Jesus reveals what it looks like to have a relationship with himself. And he's going to offer us some things in this relationship. It's a relationship unlike anything else. And so we're going to be looking at three aspects of this relationship with Jesus, three things that he offers us as we enter a relationship with him. And here's the bottom line I want you guys to walk away with today. I want you to rest in your relationship with Jesus. I want you to enter into a relationship that's about the rest that he offers you. And we're going to see that throughout this text. Jesus offers us a relationship, and this relationship is a life-changing relationship. So verse 18, it says this. It says, now John's disciples and the Pharisees were fasting, and people came and asked him, being Jesus, why do John's disciples and the Pharisees' disciples fast, but your disciples do not fast? And Jesus said to them, the wedding guests cannot fast while the groom is with them, can they? As long as they have the groom with them, they cannot fast. But the time will come when the groom will be taken away from them, and then they will fast on that day. No one sews a patch of unshrunk cloth on an old garment. Otherwise, the new patch pulls away from the old cloth and a worse tear is made. And no one puts new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise, the wine will burst the skins and the wine is lost as well as the skins. No, new wine is put into fresh wineskins. Jesus is approached by some people who notice that there's a difference between his disciples and the disciples of the Pharisees and of John the Baptist. And the difference is that Jesus' disciples are not fasting. Everybody else's disciples are fasting, but Jesus's are not. And so they say, hey, listen, why is this happening? Why are you not commanding your disciples to fast? And Jesus answers them with a story. He answers them with an illustration of what a relationship with himself looks like. And it's all about joy. This is what Jesus offers us. He offers us joy in our relationship with himself. Now, fasting is a spiritual endeavor. And often, like, you hear the word fasting, you're like, listen, I think that's really cool, and I aspire to doing that, but not today because I'm hungry, right? And fasting is one of those spiritual disciplines that we're, like, sometimes not ready to enter into. And so this actually sounds like great news. Jesus' disciples don't fast. So, like, why is Jesus okay with them not fasting? It's a great question to ask. And why are the Pharisees' disciples and John's disciples fasting? So it's a great question to ask ourselves as we look at this text. Now, fasting as a spiritual discipline is ultimately about focusing yourself on the spiritual things in your life. And here, when it comes to fasting, John's disciples and the Pharisees' disciples were fasting because they were focusing on God and trying to get God to pay attention to their prayers. So they're focusing through refraining from eating. Often they'd refrain even from drinking in order that their prayers would be answered. And often when they would do this kind of praying and fasting, the context was sorrow and sadness, usually over their sinful condition. Sorrow and sadness. So people would come and they'd fast, and the Pharisees would often fast a couple times a week. So this is like part of their regular routine of praying and fasting so that God would listen to them and so that they could feel like they're close to God. But Jesus' disciples don't do that. They're not fasting at all. And so when Jesus posed this question, he answers them by telling them about the realities of this new relationship that he's offering them. Because Jesus is bringing in something different than what they've experienced before. And he says this, he says, they're not going to fast because the groom is here with them. And he gives this illustration of a wedding and how when the wedding's happening, there's joy and not sorrow. I had an opportunity yesterday to do a wedding. I love doing weddings. This wedding was particularly different because I performed the wedding for my father-in-law and his bride. It's not every day a man gets to do the wedding for his father-in-law. It was an incredible experience. And I'm just going to tell you, there's something beautiful about a wedding where you see the bride come down, you see the groom begin to tear up, and there's just this incredible joy that happens during the wedding. It's just this joyous celebration. No one is fasting on a wedding day, right? No one's doing that. Why? Because it's a moment of celebration, and Jesus says, listen, I'm here, so they can't fast because I'm here. They will fast someday, but right now they're not going to do that because I'm in their presence. And in my presence, there's joy. There's no sorrow. Now, one of the things that you see also Jesus saying here is he says, listen, there's some new reality that I'm bringing to bear among you. And he gives this illustration of clothing and clothing that is patched. Now, this would have been a common illustration that they would have understood at that point. Now, we don't necessarily patch our clothes. There might be some handy people in this room who do know how to make some great killer patches on things. Personally, I don't know how to make a patch. I'm like completely helpless. I take it to my mom. I'm like, listen, can you help me? Because the sewing thing never got passed down to me, right? It's just kind of not been something that I learned. In fact, I try to avoid it as much as possible. In fact, if anything breaks, I'm probably like you. We just go to Target and get something new, right? We're just like, okay, that becomes a rag. We're going to get a new item of clothing, right? Jesus' day, people didn't have that kind of ability to just go buy something new. Often they were very poor, and so they would patch their clothing. And Jesus uses a picture that everyone would have been very aware of, in that when you have something that's ripped, you can't put something new on it to patch it. You can't put new unshrunk cloth on an old stretched out piece of clothing, because if you do that, it will rip it apart and make a worse hole than that was there before. That's what Jesus says. He says, a new patch pulls away from the old cloth, and a worse tear is made. So you can't just patch something old with something new. You learned something today, right there, right? Patching 101 at church. You never thought that would happen. And Jesus is actually pointing to something better or different than patching, just an old clothing, just old clothing. What he's doing, he's pointing to spiritual reality in that you can't just take Jesus and use him to patch up your religion. Because what Jesus does is he reveals the brokenness of that religious system. He's offering a relationship, and a worse tear is made if you just try to add him to your religious experience. No, Jesus is starting and beginning something completely new. The second illustration Jesus uses to illustrate this is about wine. Now, all the Baptists in the room just got really, you know, uncomfortable because Jesus starts talking about wine. But what Jesus here uses is an illustration of their winemaking process in this time. And he says, no one puts new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise, the wine will burst the skins. So in Jesus' day, they didn't have wine bottles, right? They would make wine by pouring them into skins, which are animal hides. And as the fermentation process would kind of take its course, the wine would stretch out the wineskin. And you never would actually go... Then after you drank all the wine, reuse that skin, because the next time, if you put new wine into an old used wine skin, then the wineskin would be split apart and you'd lose both the wine and the wineskin. And Jesus is using this illustration to show that he's bringing something new. You have to start all over. You can't just add what he's doing to their previous experience. He's bringing an entirely different paradigm, and it's a paradigm of relationship that brings incredible joy. Incredible joy. Now, for some of you in this room, you're like, what are you really talking about? Like, what does it mean to have joy in a relationship with God? Like, I want to have that kind of relationship, but I don't really understand what it means. What does it mean to have joy in a relationship with God? Joy is a funny thing. Joy isn't just having a good time or feeling happy. Joy is something that is deeper than just the way you feel about life. Joy is actually something far more powerful than simply being happy. Joy enters into your heart and changes it. And joy is deeply relational. Joy is about identity and who you really are. It is something that is at the core of who you are. And Jesus is offering us this kind of joy through his relationship with us. I got just a small taste of this actually last week. So I've got three little girls. Abigail is 7, Violet is 5, and Georgia is 2. And because it was beautiful last weekend, we said, okay, we got to go take all these kids out and go ride on their bikes. Now, the problem is that Abigail's been transitioning away from training wheels. We should have done this years ago, but like Abigail is incredibly athletic and she's bright, but she's also very scared to try new things. So we've been rolling with the training wheels for a while. This spring, I just said, okay, we're taking them off. We're just going to start. You're going to learn how to ride a bike, which by the way, as dad, like I was kind of like, how do you really teach a child how to ride a bike? Like, I guess you just run with them next to them until they just kind of figured it out. So we tried that a couple weeks ago, and she started doing pretty good, but then was a little nervous and scared, and she'd kind of pedal, and then she'd try to oversteer and start to kind of try to grab her so she doesn't, like, you know, go head over the handlebars, you know, which is like everybody's worst fear, right? You're like all broken teeth. So she's just kind of like, oh, no. Try to keep that dental bill, you know, in check. So you're kind of like staying real close. And last week, it was like that right when we started. She was like wanting us to stay really, really close. So I'm like running next to her and trying to hold her and just make sure she doesn't fall. And all of a sudden, around the second time that we went out on this lap near our house, there was this loop that we took them to. She all of a sudden just got it. And she just took off. And I couldn't keep up anymore. I was like, oh my gosh, she's fast on that bike, right? So I just watched her take off. And she started just doing laps around that thing. And as I was watching her, there was something within my heart that just kind of just blossomed, something I never really experienced before. It was just like, it's almost like a flower unfolded inside of me. I know that sounds really, really like kind of weird language. It was almost like this opening, like feeling. And I always joke, like, I really don't understand feelings. That's why God gave me daughters, right? Like, I always like have like two feelings. It's like being like either like I'm just normal or I'm like hungry. Like, there's like really just two emotions that I kind of work through. But like, there's this like feeling of incredible satisfaction and joy in experiencing somebody else have happiness and seeing my little girl just like take off and just grow up before my eyes, and just the pride and just the satisfaction and just the deep, deep, deep happiness was amazing. And in that moment, I just got a picture of the joy that God has for us. See, there's something tied deeper in that, that's tied into this relational component where we interact with the deepest relationships in our life, where we get to see just a picture of what God has for us, of a joy that he wants us to walk in, to be his, and to enter into this relational thing. Because what we were doing is more than a bike. It was a relationship that was just growing and flourishing. And God has that for you. The reality of a relationship with God is that God ultimately wants it to be something about joy. And the way that joy really works is something new. It's not about doing all the right things so that God will love you and having all the right answers and having perfect attendance. No, it's not about those things. What God deeply desires is he desires for you to find your satisfaction in him. That's something completely different and new. It's seeing that he's the groom at the wedding and celebrating in his joy and entering into that moment fully. John Piper always says this. I love this statement that he says. He says that God is most glorified when I am most satisfied in him. What that means is that God is glorified when I find deep satisfaction and joy in Jesus. So here's the deal. Your walk with God is about joy in Jesus. Your walk with Jesus is not about satisfying God. Let me just say that today. Your walk with Jesus is not about satisfying God. It is about being satisfied in him. See, religion says you got to do things to satisfy God. You got to do all the right things to satisfy him so that he will let you be in relationship with him and that you can go to heaven and that God's wrath will not be put upon you. And I know even when I said that, some of you guys are like, wait, what? But my walk with Jesus isn't about satisfying him? That seems wrong. But it's absolutely true. Because you cannot satisfy God. That's what the cross is about. It's God satisfying the wrath of God on your behalf, so that when you put your faith in Jesus, God sees Jesus and his righteousness and he is satisfied. His satisfaction is based on God's righteousness put on your behalf. And God is calling you to be satisfied in him and his goodness, which brings great joy because it's not about how good you are. It's about how good he is. It's about worshiping Jesus. When you find satisfaction in Jesus, you find joy. You find joy because he looks at you and says, that one is mine. Now, the second thing you see that Jesus offers is he first offers joy. Secondly, he offers rest. So we see this in verse 23. Let's pick up in verse 23. It says, on the Sabbath, he was going through the grain fields, and his disciples began to make their way, picking some grains, heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, look, why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath? And he said to them, have you never read what David and those who were with him did when he was in need and hungry? How he entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar the high priest and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for anyone to eat except the priests, and also gave some to his companions. Then he told them, the Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. So then, the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath. Now, what you find here is that Jesus is on his way to worship. You'll find that in just a minute. And as he's walking, his disciples are hungry. And so what they do is they scoop up some of the grain that they're walking through. They're probably walking through this field, and they begin to eat it. Now, that doesn't seem like a big deal. We've all kind of walked through like fields and kind of like ripped the tops off of like the plants that are around us, right? One of the things I find myself doing is if I'm walking near a evergreen tree, I always like grab a branch and kind of strip it down. I don't know why I do that. That's kind of what they're doing here with grain, and they're eating it. And when you read the story, you're like, okay, that doesn't seem like that big a deal. But this is a really, really big deal to the Pharisees. Because what Jesus' disciples are doing in their eyes is they're breaking the Sabbath law and they are sinning. They're breaking the commandment. And so they come to Jesus and say, hey, why are they getting away with this? You should smack them on the hand. They're sinning against God. And so Jesus is put in a position where he is now calling, being called out, and he needs to reprimand his disciples. But instead of doing that, he tells them a story, which he often does. Instead of doing that, he refers back to King David, the greatest king in the history of Israel, and points to something far different than they expected. Verse 25 says that he points back to David and David's story of when he was running from his own son. If you go back to David's story, at one point his son Absalom tries to stage a military coup and take the kingdom from David. And David runs from Absalom and runs for his life. And as he's running, he stops in the place where the worship of God was, into the house of God, and goes and takes the bread that was only for the priests. No one should even have entered into that space, but David enters into the tabernacle and then takes that bread and gives it to his men. And Jesus points to something that was pretty scandalous. He's saying, listen, you guys are worried about some grain that's not even cooked. David went into the tabernacle and took actual bread that was prepared only for the worship of God. And then he goes on to say this. He says, the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. And by this, he means is that we are not created so that we can keep the law. The law wasn't made for people to worship it. The law was given so that we can know what it's like to follow God. The law was created to order us towards worship. We're not made to worship the law. And then he goes on to say something that's really radical. Verse 28, Jesus says, so the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. Jesus claims authority over the Sabbath itself. What Jesus is doing here is he's saying, listen, I am bringing a different reality. You guys are using the Sabbath as a time of rest. That's what Sabbath was. Sabbath was a day during the week, starting at sundown on Friday all the way to sundown on Saturday, where the Jewish people would rest. And they're doing this in accordance to the fourth commandment, where God says you're to keep that day holy and you're not supposed to work at all. It's a day you're supposed to rest and spend time with me. And so every week on Fridays, they would stop everything they would do and they would rest. Now the Pharisees were like really serious about keeping the law. And so what they did is they actually said, all right, let's figure out what work really is. And anything that could be work, we're just not going to do. And so they moved the boundaries all the way back over here to make sure that they wouldn't break God's law. But Jesus is saying, listen, you guys are missing the entire point of the Sabbath. The Sabbath isn't about a day of rest. The Sabbath is pointing to something very different. The Sabbath is pointing to me. I'm the true rest. See, when you study Jesus' interaction with the law, with the Old Testament, you find something that's really interesting. Jesus reinforces every one of the Ten Commandments. You guys are aware of the Ten Commandments, right? Have no other gods before me. Shall not kill, shall not murder, shall not commit adultery. Jesus takes all of those and like takes them to another level. So when Moses wrote down and said, okay, you should not commit adultery, Jesus says, listen, if you even have a lustful thought in your mind, then you're committing adultery. The law, when it was written, says you should not kill. Jesus says, if you even have hatred in your heart, then you've done the same thing as killing that person. So he takes the law and then raises it to the true meaning behind it. And he does it with every one of the Ten Commandments except for the fourth commandment, the Sabbath commandment. And here he's like, free for all, go eat whatever you want. Why does he do that? Because he's saying, I am the true meaning of the Sabbath. I am the reason why you Sabbath. And I give rest. I'm the one who's going to give you the rest for your souls. He goes on to say this in Matthew chapter 11, verse 28. Jesus says something about this kind of rest that he's offering. He says, come to me, all of you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. This morning, if you feel tired, if you feel that you cannot continue as you are, if you're feeling the weight of depression this morning, if you feel the weight of loneliness this morning, if you feel the weight of anxiety this morning, if you feel the weight of your sin this morning, know this, Jesus says, come to me if you're weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. That's what it means that he's the Lord of the Sabbath. He gives people rest. It's not about a day, it's about a relationship. And he goes on to say this, says, take up my yoke and learn from me, because I am lowly and humble in your heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Jesus invites us to enter into a relationship with him. This word yoke is a double meaning. It has double meaning. The first meaning is that a yoke that you would use for an oxen, right? That was plowing a field. The burden that a beast of burden would carry. And he says, I have a light yoke. But it's also tied into the way a Pharisee or a teacher of the law would talk about what it looked like to be right with God. The yoke was also the way people would talk about the teaching that a rabbi would have for his students, of how they're supposed to live their life to please God. And Jesus says, the way that I am teaching you how you're to please God is easy and light. And you will find rest for your souls in it. Jesus is offering a relationship that is about rest. Rest in knowing that you are safe with Jesus. Have you ever had a relationship where you did not feel safe? It might have been an abusive relationship, where there was some kind of abuse in that relationship. It might have been a relationship where there was no abuse, but you did not feel like you were safe in that relationship, that if you said something, they would leave. Maybe it was a boyfriend or girlfriend you had in the past, and you were like, man, listen, if I just say the wrong thing, they're out. They're going to ghost me. I'm never going to see them again. You just kind of this fear, right? Maybe there was a relationship you had with some friends, and you're like, man, I just don't know if these people are really my friends or not. I don't know if I feel safe in this relationship. But Jesus offers you a relationship that's grounded on himself, and he says that I will never leave you or forsake you. One of the most eye-opening experiences of my life was actually finding someone that really loved me for who I am. I think every single one of us carries these deep insecurities that we carry, and we wonder if anybody's going to really love us if we actually had that thing known about us, whether it was a part of our history, our past, or part some kind of brokenness or this anxiety that we may have about just ourselves. We wonder if that person's really going to love us, if there's ever going to be somebody who will know us and love us just as we are. And we all have these things that we just feel like, man, listen, if somebody knew, they won't love us. We may feel like an imposter. I remember when I first met my wife, I was deeply, deeply, deeply insecure about my hair. It's a weird thing, okay? I don't know why. I think part of it was like growing up in South America, I looked different than everybody else, and my hair was different than everybody else's. And I wanted black hair so badly that I would walk to school with my hair slicked down and wet. My mom was like, "What's wrong with you?" Okay. And so I always had this weird thing with my hair. So in college, I wore a hat every day. Part of it was I was lazy. I didn't want to do anything with my hair. Secondly, I had no idea what to do with it. And third, I just didn't like my hair. So I'd wear a hat every day. Some people thought I was bald because they had never seen me without a hat. You actually have something underneath there, right? And so when I started dating Tabitha, I realized she actually liked my hair. And that was an incredibly freeing thing. I know it sounds really weird, right? But I was like, oh, you actually... So I kind of went overboard. I grew up mutton chops. It was this thing where... You see the pictures of when we're first dating. I've got these big Wolverine looking chops. They're all curly and weird because that's what my hair does. And I just was in this place where I was finally feel truly accepted. And this thing about me that I don't like, she actually thinks is cool. And it was this eye-opening experience for me. Don't make fun of my hair, by the way. I don't know if I can take it. and here's the thing. It's when we approach God, we often feel the same way. In fact, that's one of the reasons why religion is so appealing to us. I just need to do these things, and then I'm good. And God says, no, I want you to come with all your mess, insecurities, all the stuff you got. I want you to just come, and you're going to find that I like you just the way you are. If you don't hear anything else today, hear this. God is crazy about you. God is crazy about you. He loves you the way you are. He knows your mess, and he got in the middle of it with you, and he is not scared. We see that in the next story. Because the thing is that God has not only just come for joy, he's not only come for rest, but he's come for flourishing. Jesus offers you flourishing. We see this in this next story. It says this, as Jesus entered the synagogue again, and a man was there who had a shriveled hand. So this guy had a hand that was curled up and shriveled. It had been damaged in some way. We don't know why, but it's just this thing that he's deformed with. It says, in order to accuse him, they were watching him closely to see whether he would heal him on the Sabbath. And he told the man with the shriveled hand, stand before us. And then he said to them, is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath or do evil, to save life or to kill? But they were silent. And after looking around at them in his anger, he was grieved at the hardness of their hearts and told the man, stretch out your hand. So he stretched it out, and his hand was restored. And immediately the Pharisees went out and started plotting with the Herodians against him, how they might kill him. See, Jesus has come to bring flourishing. He sees this man whose life is in many ways ruined because he can't use his hand. And Jesus brings this man in front of everybody in church and in the synagogue on a Sabbath and says, what do you guys want me to do with this guy? And here you find something that is so terrifying about being somebody who is religious. So you're more worried about keeping the religion than the relationship, even with your brother. And this man whose life has been ruined because of the loss of his hand is standing before Jesus, and everyone is wondering if he's going to break the law by healing him. Everybody's wondering, like, Jesus, will you go do this? Will you break the law? Will you break Sabbath law? Because this is work to actually heal this person. And Jesus becomes angry. He becomes angry at the hardness of their hearts because they're interested in keeping the rules rather than the relationship. And what Jesus does here is he heals this man because this is the kind of God that we follow. He is a God who offers flourishing and relationship because he sees those who are broken and runs to them. He runs to them because he loves them. And I believe we, as a church, we need to have the same heart for those around us and realize that the thing that brings true human flourishing is not having more money. It's not having more stuff. It's not having more experiences. It's not about anything other than having an authentic relationship with Jesus. Because he's the one who heals our soul. He's the one who brings us back to life. He's the one who brings us flourishing. That's what Jesus offers. This morning, I got here a little early. And we didn't have to set up all the kids' stuff because like it was spring break, which is awesome. And I sat here, right here at this spot in front of the stage, and I started just pouring my heart out to the Lord and started just saying, Jesus, I want more than anything else to see a revival break out in our city. Jesus, would you please move mightily to bring men and women back home to yourself? Would you do that? Because I find sometimes that my attention gets focused on other things, like fixing problems or just getting through the week, and I lose sight of the most important thing is that Jesus has come to give us rest for our souls. He's come to give us love. He's come to give us joy. He's come to give us relationship, rest, and flourishing. So I've been asking myself this question all morning. What would it look like if a revival broke out in our city? And how can you get there? I don't know what that looks like, but I think it begins with prayer. There's no way that we can do that on our own effort. There's nothing we can do to change the hearts of men and women from religion to relationship. So Jesus is calling us to enter into this relationship with himself. And when we enter into it, then we get to bring others into it as well. So I want to start praying that God would do something special here at this church. Easter's coming up, and Easter's a time where many people will actually say, yes, I'll actually come and visit a church on a Sunday morning. And so we're praying that God would fill this room with souls, eternal souls, that would fall in love with Jesus. What would it look like if we saw men and women come to faith in Jesus? The only way we can do that is if every single one of us starts saying, Jesus, I want that for myself. I want to feel that revival awaken my heart again for you. And then I want my friends to feel the same way. Because relationships are a bridge where the gospel crosses over from one life to the next. And relationships take time. Relationships are about spending time with somebody else. Listen, if you had a friend who came to you and said, listen, I think I found somebody. I've got like the butterflies in my stomach, what should I do? What would you give them advice about how to pursue that relationship? I think every single one of us have been in that spot where we've had a relationship with somebody, we're like, okay, I like them, what am I supposed to do next? Well, there are a couple ways we could do it wrong. First, we could just like talk about it, talk to the person and say, hey, listen, hey, what would it make for us to make this relationship work? Right? If you showed up and said, hey, listen, I think I like you. If I give you flowers, would you love me? I took you on 7 dates, would you say you love me? Or is it 14? Like, that's The Bachelor. It's not life, right? Is it like just talking through it and coming up with like an agreement to make this work? No, that's not how relationships work. It kills relationships when you make it all about how to make it work and not enter into what it actually looks like to fall in love with somebody. It's the same is true with our relationship with God. It's not a contract. Second mistake we can make is if we say, you were going to treat this relationship like a commodity. I'm just going to go pursue it for what I can get out of it. And I'm going to go try to jump into it physically and just try to like just make this happen directly without allowing the relationship just to grow the way relationships do. And if we do that in our walk with God, we will always find ourselves also very, very frustrated. Because a relationship with God is a lot more like a dance. It's entering into a relationship with a real person. It's taking the time to go spend time with God and hear his voice and rest in him and find joy in him and find flourishing in him and resting in him. So God is offering his hand to you and inviting you to take a step to dance with him. Doesn't mean that you'll have all the answers figured out. Doesn't mean that you're going to have everything cleaned up before you come to him. It doesn't mean that you're going to have all the answers just right. It doesn't mean that you're going to be a good religious person first. Jesus just says, you want to enter into this with me. Will you dance? Will you step into a relationship with me? Will you just do that? And friend, if that's you today, if you've never seen Christ as a place, as a person who's willing to walk with you and enter into a relationship with you, today you can make that decision by just saying, I want in. I'm going to follow. I'm going to hear. I'm going to enter into something new because I've been carrying this journey and this burden for so long on my own, and I actually need that rest. I'm going to dance with the one who made me. And I'm going to pursue him, and I'm going to find joy as I do that. So let me pray for us as we close. Jesus, we come as men and women who constantly revert back to rule-keeping, constantly fall back to trying to use you to advance our own name, our own purposes, who fall back on trying to do it on our own. And today we say we want to rest in you. We want to step into joy. We want to step into rest. We want to step into flourishing. We want to dance with the one who loves our soul and gave himself for us. We want to pursue this relationship because it is water to our souls. It's what truly satisfies. And if anybody in this room hearing my voice today has never taken that step, I'm going to invite you today to say, I want that. I want to take that step. I want to trust Jesus with my life. If that's you today, just in the place that you are right now where you're sitting, would you just say, I want Jesus. I want to trust Jesus with my life. I want that rest. I am tired. I need him. If that's you today, I want to just invite you just to let me know. Just look at me. If that's you, if you want that, just look at me. Just be the first person to tell me that you want rest with Jesus. It's the most important decision you can ever make to say, I'm going to put my hope and confidence in Jesus. It's Jesus. God, I pray for my friends who are making decisions right now to trust you. I pray that that would be a true trust. Trust in you, a relationship that flourishes and blossoms and becomes something lovely as we dance with you, the King of our heart. We pray this in your name, Jesus. Amen.
Thanks for listening to the Gospel Church podcast. Before you go, please hit subscribe. And if you want to give to support the mission, please hit the link in the description. We'll see you next week.